It's time to hear from the Green Party with co-leader James Shaw.
This week, I chatted to Green Party co-leader James Shaw, and we had a cheeky two-part interview this morning as we got interrupted by a fire alarm. So in the first part, we talk about the Green Party's call to end armed police response teams in New Zealand, and as the Black Lives Matter movement continues following the death of George Floyd. We begin, however, first by touching base on the Emergency Welfare Fund and what it means for migrant workers, as more than half of the $30 million fund have already been used in just over a month.
Well, you know that we have kept aside about $20 billion as a contingency fund to allow us to kind of make a set of ongoing decisions rather than just have everything in the budget. And that's really so that we can kind of respond to the situation as it emerges. So I'm not aware that there's any immediate plan to increase the support package. It hasn't yet been expired, but it wouldn't surprise me if that had to get extended.
We saw that particularly in Queenstown. We have concerns of community who work visas are expiring and are facing unemployment. So
yeah.
In terms of support, especially in Auckland as well, I think those are some areas where those communities are caught out. And so, what support is kind of targeted given to them?
Are you referring to migrant workers?
Migrant workers in particular.
No, look, it is an area of particular concern. And there are quite a lot of people who, who were in a situation where either they've gotten to the end of their work permit and they were planning to go home and they now can't, they were, sort of hoping to kind of stay a bit longer and continue to work, but that work has dried up, as it is kind of all around the country. Like I said, at the moment we've got this emergency welfare fund, much of which has gone towards foreign and migrant workers who can't get home. And I think, you talked about Queenstown. I think something like 4,500 requests from foreign workers who have been caught out here have already, in that part of the country, have already been supported this way. And I would anticipate that, that's even if we move to level one, we still have the issue of, people being able to get home.
Kind of tone I picked up particularly was that the assistance was important, that it didn't discriminate based on where someone came from. And so other than financial support, are we seeing other forms of support as well for our migrant worker community?
Yeah, I mean, there's the support package includes food, transport, clothing, accommodation, and I think at its peak, something like 6,500 food parcels were handed out, whilst we were in the kind of peak of lockdown.
And also today I wanted to talk about, I think, something that has been quite a substantial topic recently was and is the Black Lives Matter movement. And then we saw how this issue, the corridor, kind of raised a lot of questions in New Zealand about the armed police and our armed response teams. And so what is the Green Party's stance in terms of the armed police?
Well, the Greens' view is that use of arms doesn't make our communities any safer, and also it doesn't help in terms of building trust in the police or de-escalating situations. And I think that the police should simply rule out the further use of armed patrols because, we need a system that people can trust. There was a trial last year where the trial was done largely in areas with predominantly Māori and Pacifica communities, and that sort of reinforces, I guess, a suspicion that there is a strong racial overtone to work that the police have done. I know there's been a bit of debate here recently about the use of the phrase unconscious bias and so on. And in fact, even the police themselves have acknowledged that and have got a work program to deal with it. But I don't think that things like that help.
Mm. So you see time and time violence, particularly directed at minority groups and people of colour. And so what can be done to mitigate this violence that is often felt by those communities?
Yeah, I mean, you talk about people of colour, but Māori in particular, more likely to get spoken to by the police, to be arrested, to be charged, to be convicted and to face imprisonment, you know, to the point where Māori make up something like 50% of the prison population, but only 15% of the general population. So, you know, there's clearly a bias there which we need to overcome. And you really only do, you only get past that through years and years and years of hard work on reforming the institution.
I see that kind of globally there's a general trend to a more military style of policing. And so in your view, what role do you think the police should play in New Zealand?
Well, they do have an armed defenders squad. You know, that's been in existence for decades, and there are occasions when they have to use it. But it's the idea of having armed police patrols on our streets, particularly, you know, as sort of illustrated by the trial that they ran last year, that seems to be focused on areas with high Māori and Pacifica communities. And I just don't think that helps, and that isn't something, you know, we just do not want that kind of US-style culture. Now, I don't think we're anything close to it here, but anything that even smells like it's moving in that direction, you know, we need to be extremely cautious about.
Mm. And I was having a look at some of the reasoning given by the police for the armed response teams, and it seems like the justification is that they want New Zealanders to feel more safe, particularly after the Christchurch terror attacks. And so, in your opinion, do you think, is this something that is justified?
I don't think that there's evidence anywhere that having armed police patrols makes people feel safer. What makes people feel safer is, you know, being able to have a roof over their head and food on the table and, a job that, you know, pays them enough to live on.
Oh, I think the fire alarm is going off in the... Okay. Yeah, so luckily there was no fire this morning, just four fire engines. And then James and I chatted later on in the morning. He called me back and we talked a little bit more about the Creative Arts Fund.
The thing that people don't often realise, because, you know, you kind of go, hang on, why are we putting so much money into the creative industries? Is because actually creative industries contribute about $11 billion a year to GDP and employ about 90,000 people. And the Treasury was estimating that actually as many as 11,000 of those 90,000 could be lost within the next 12 months if we didn't act. So it was a pretty important package to put together. And it goes into the sort of five main areas. Careers support for creative job seekers. There's a Creative Arts Recovery and Employment Fund, which is really about commissioning and supporting creative projects at a national and local level. There's an Innovation Fund, which is a contestable fund to support, you know, new projects and so on. There's a Cultural Capability Fund to focus on sort of more immediate needs like legal services and online delivery and so on. And then there's a Music Recovery Fund, which is primarily through New Zealand On Air and a live music touring fund, but a bit for sort of music venues and things like that as well, and a bit to help musicians recoup lost income. So it sort of goes into, you know, as you can see, a number of different areas, and it really is just to try and make sure, like other industries, that actually they're able to stay intact during the economic downturn.
There's a lot of particularly musicians and those working in the creative arts sector, it is freelancing and working gig by gig. And so does this kind of package encompass that? That's kind of the structure that a lot of those jobs are.
Well, sort of two things. Right? So first of all, the wage subsidy scheme was designed in a way so that people who are in the gig economy could take advantage of that. So they're supported that way as well. But things like the Creative Arts Recovery and Employment Fund is sort of built really, you know, this whole idea of kind of commissioning projects to ensure that people have got work to do, you know, and because in an economic downturn, you know, given that so much of the creative industries rely on things like corporate sponsorship and, you know, donations from the public and, you know, so on, actually a lot of that gets, anytime there's an economic downturn, that dries up. and it's often the creative sector that's sort of the first to go because it's sort of viewed as discretionary. And then it takes forever to rebuild. And so what we're doing here is we're really just trying to step into that gap.
And obviously as part of the COVID-19 recovery, there's a lot of focus and emphasis on the economic aspects. And I guess I wanted to also, often we've seen arts perhaps devalued because the focus isn't always on the economics. It's more about social well-being and community. So what is the importance of art for communities?
Well, I mean, our view is that the creative industries are crucial for our well-being. And, you know, many people during the lockdown actually were kind of relying on creative expression, some sort of creative industry to help to kind of get them through that kind of period. So, you know, in my view, it's only right that we support them. But it is a very precarious sector, and that is because it is sort of viewed as discretionary and it is kind of very vulnerable to these sort of swings. So in my view, I think it's exactly the kind of time where you actually want to be supporting. It's not just because of the numbers of people who work in the sector who, you know, like anybody else, we want to make sure are able to, you know, maintain a income and put a roof over their head and food on the table, but also because, you know, it really does serve a service to the rest of the community.
That was James Shaw for The Green Party. The Wire.